The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show Hour 1 Podcast.
And we have made it to the middle of the week. We're delighted you decided to drop by. Thanks for being here. We have a lot to share with you, some guests waiting. Let's get right to our headlines here on a Wednesday afternoon. And Gene Smith, remember him? He's the AD at Ohio State. He's just tossing ideas out, like millionaires drop quarters, proposing that football programs abandon the NCAA and operate under a CFP. Gene, whatever gave you that idea? We've been talking about that for years, but thanks for joining the 21st century. More news from the spring meetings in Arizona. What's up out there? How about two common sense solutions emerged among all the complaints? How about eliminate the yearly cap on new players, currently limited to 25 per year, create windows when transfer portal is open, December, February, and April. That makes a lot of sense. Probably won't pass. Some actual football, Mario Cristobal, we mentioned we heard from him the other day, because he about to turn Miami into a major player overnight. He certainly could. And Lincoln Riley denies he left Oklahoma to avoid the SEC. You're skeptical of that?
Yes.
How dare you? Let's talk to the guy who talked to Lincoln Riley, Brandon Marcello. Brandon, good to have you on. So let's talk about Lincoln. You covered him at OU. You know him obviously well enough to get him to be with you this week. What did he say?
Well, I saved that question near the end of our interview because I knew it might ruffle his feathers. I know there have been reports out there that he was, one, not happy with the idea of joining the SEC way back in July and August, when obviously USC wasn't even a possibility. And, of course, it came up again in December. He says there's no truth to it. In fact, he said, if I wanted to do the easy thing, I would have just stayed at OU and ended up going to the SEC in a few years. So that's what he says. I'll leave that up to the general public to decide whether that's actually being thought about deep inside of his own mind. But, yeah, that's where we're at right now.
Brandon, it's interesting because I don't know Lincoln Riley very well, but in the few encounters, he seems like a reasonably nice guy, low-key. But suddenly, he's like the villain of college football. Is this the Lincoln Riley you've been around for many years?
No, I mean, he was a fast riser and was just happy to kind of have a job. I mean, going from East Carolina, it's all of a sudden OU, and then becoming the head coach after just a few years at OU again. And I think he was in a position where he was just kind of happy to be employed and continue to rise up the ranks. And he didn't feel like necessarily that, you know, he should just spend out his entire coaching career at one spot just because it was his first gig. And his first gig was huge at OU, obviously, one of the top gigs in the country. But that shouldn't have to, I guess, anchor him to one spot for the rest of his career. I don't think he had, like, you know, ulterior motives and, like, I'm this character behind the scenes you're not accustomed to seeing publicly that is kind of got nefarious things going on. I just think that he was thinking about himself and his family and where his career is going to be in 10 years. And he didn't see OU in that picture. Having said that, he's learned here very quickly that he has become a villain in college football, and especially in the state of Oklahoma, and he's going to have to deal with that. You know, I talked to him a little bit about how he's always been kind of guarded. I've had people close to him say he's pretty introverted, and he really likes being in California right now because when he goes out, no one really knows who he is out in public. Whereas in Norman, he was being stopped every 5 seconds. So I think he, in a lot of ways, is still learning what it's like to be a head coach and to be a popular figure. And let's be honest, USC, great gig, big-time job. You could win national championships there. But you're in L.A. You're around the Lakers, the Dodgers, and everything else. You're not going to be the top dog there like you were in the state of Oklahoma.
Yeah, they got a few famous people living, you know, that aren't even sports figures. Brandon, let's talk about the Jordan Addison situation. He's caught a lot of flack. Pat Narduzzi has gone after him for tampering. I laugh at that because how do you tamper nowadays in the current world that we live in? But what is your impression of what he's doing out there and the amount of talent that he has acquired?
I mean, listen, Jordan Addison is testing the market. And right now, I'm surprised we haven't seen more players of his stature or even near his stature doing the same exact thing before the May 1st deadline hit. This is really going to be a huge test study for a lot of these guys who maybe weren't even looking to leave their school but want to enter the transfer portal because really there's no penalty for doing so other than maybe the school you're at currently going, we don't have a scholarship spot for you. But do you really think that Pitt's going to go, we don't have a spot for you, Addison, if you decide to come back? No. He's going to be able to go back there if he wants. And USC obviously has been connected there. Texas as well. Texas is going after him. And I hate using the term bidding war, but this is turning into a bidding war and among several schools. And how much he's going to get, I think, is obviously important to him. I also think it's important that he wants to win a championship this year in his final season playing college football. And does a place like Texas provide that? Does USC provide it? Does Alabama provide it? There are other schools that could potentially get involved here. But the two schools that we've heard and be able to confirm are USC and Texas. And he's gonna get quite the payday wherever he goes.
There's a report out today that – he's been working out in California, I think it's in California, with Bryce Young. Are we to read anything into that?
I'm not so certain you should. A lot of these guys, even in the past before NIL and there was free transfer without a penalty, a lot of these guys would get hook up after spring practices and go practice at some of these big-time quarterback gurus camps and other facilities. So I wouldn't read too much into that. Obviously, it would help if Alabama starts showing a big interest in him, but been unable to confirm that Alabama's been going after him. But, yes, he is in California working out with Alabama quarterback Bryce Young.
Let's finish here talking about all the proposals of change and tamping down or clamping down on NIL. What I know there's too much to unpack here in a minute or two, but what is your view of what is around the corner as we head toward the next season?
It's too little, too late, and I think that there are some things they can do, the NCAA and other committees, to be able to, I guess, kind of corral some issues. The big issue to me right now is not necessarily NIL and the collectives, because, listen, the NCAA is never really going to be able to wrangle that and bring it down to what kind of what they want, which is we want to be able to tell you how much these people can maybe spend on the players. We don't want boosters involved. And all that. Good luck doing that. I mean, the NCAA was worried about antitrust issues and players suing them. Get ready for these multi-million dollar and business owners and boosters getting involved as well. This will be in the courts forever if they're to try to kind of clamp down on that. But the big thing to me is this scholarship issue, and I'm glad it's finally being brought up and being discussed and can potentially have something in place here as early as this year. Which is, as simply put, instead of just saying, hey, you can only have 25 scholarships and maybe bump that up to 32 based off of your scholarship situation, just fill your scholarships up until you have 85 guys on campus. That's exactly what they should have been doing all along. But because there's no penalty for transferring now, you can be immediately eligible once in your college career. That offers a lot of power still with the players and also with the coaches. And I think it's a good balancing act. It just makes sense for keeping a roster full. I mean, you look throughout history, and especially right now, several teams more so because of the portal, teams like USC right now, Florida, they're below the scholarship limit because they just don't have enough bodies. And so why wouldn't you allow them to be able to fill their roster spots? Just makes sense, and it'll be done sooner than later.
Great, great stuff from Brandon Marcello. Many, many thanks, Brandon. We appreciate it. As we head to the break, let us tell you the rest of the lineup this afternoon. Al Borges, former offensive coordinator under Tommy Tuberville. Yes, the senator. Nearly won a national championship. Al's got a book coming out, and he'll talk about that. Ryan Howard, remember a couple weeks ago, number one pick in the NFL draft, the WNBA draft. Maybe the NFL draft. Barry Trammell, no relation to Pete Thamel, will join us later on as well. Coach Borges next.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be. Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-hour energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5hourenergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5hourenergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
And we continue our great debate series. We talked yesterday about Peyton Manning and Charles Woodson. Today, the 2004 Auburn Tigers, who went undefeated, but Oklahoma and SC were also undefeated and played for the national championship. It was an amazing year to watch. Everybody had impressive records and resumes. The only problem for Auburn that Oklahoma and SC started the season ranked 1 and 2, and that never changed. Al Borges was the offensive coordinator then under Tommy Tuberville, yes, the United States Senator. Coach Borges, it's been too long. I know you have a book coming out this summer and can't wait to read it. You also, of course, been the offensive coordinator a number of places, including Michigan. It's great to have you here, and I certainly hope your life has gone well since we have last seen you, which was a number of years ago. Good afternoon.
Hey, it's good to hear from you, Paul. God, I haven't cussed at you in a long time.
Yeah,
God, like, I don't know. 18 years since I badmouthed you. This is we got.
Yeah, we used
right
to have
now.
Some fun on the rubber chicken circuit when we were together. hey, before we even get to such weighty matters as your life and your book and that season, what do you make out of your former boss going to Washington?
I think it was well known that Tommy and I were on different ends of the scale when it comes to politics.
I thought you were.
But am I surprised? Not one bit. No, I think he's a good fit, particularly in Alabama, because I think that he represents what Alabama wants, and that's a good thing, you know. So, but
Coach Al, that was the most diplomatic response I think I've ever heard,
that's the best I can do. Okay, it's not getting any better than that. Okay, so, but in my book, I allude to that, and you even have a part of my book. Okay, I got a little section in there about you.
So, are you going to keep all of us in suspense until? I guess you are. When is the book out?
Yeah. What am I going to tell you? I'm going to tell you what's in the book. Nobody will buy it.
No, you're right. But, don't dare tell me, but my lawyers will be waiting outside your door the next day, I can assure you.
I'm well armed, too, so you can't threaten me. Anyway, it comes out in August, and it's the book is fun. I mean, it's authentic now. I'm not gonna lie to you there. There's some things in there that I hesitated to write, but it's not a tell-all by any means. But it is written from a coach's perspective, Paul. This is not Hemingway or Gresham or John Steinbeck. This is me, and I did not want to belie the authenticity. So sometimes it's a little PG, but I think it'll be a fun read, particularly for Auburn fans, but football fans in general. I mean, it's about a special team that didn't get an opportunity to play for the national championship. I kind of make a statement that I think I probably should have made a long time ago, but I visited Auburn, went to the Iron Bowl, and came home because my son wants to go to Auburn, and I took him to the Iron Bowl this last year. And I came home, and I said, I got to do something because the fans were so great. It's like I never left. It was 18 years after the fact, and it was like I never left. I was getting stopped at every turn. So I sat down and see how long I'd last writing a book, and in about 3 weeks, I hammered it out. So we'll see. I mean, I think you'll find it.
I can't wait to read it, and I will. And I will definitely converse afterwards, whether it's through my legal representation or me personally. Coach, let's talk about that season for a second, because Auburn really helped change the world of college football with that season, because afterwards the commissioner of the SEC decided we can never have an undefeated SEC champion who doesn't contend for the national championship, and that, of course, has not happened since. What made that Auburn team so other than your coaching, and you had some amazing players, I think three of your backfield mates were went in the first round, if I remember correctly, four in all. It was a very talented team.
Yeah, they were on a mission, Paul. They were on after the tumultuous 2003, all the crap that went on then, and I didn't experience that. I got the residuals of that, but they were on a mission, and they weren't going to be denied. It was every week. You know, we started with no great expectations. I think we started at 17. So there was no noise out there like there was a year before, where I think a lot of the publications were rating Auburn real high. Some of the pressures of that and it was, probably got to them a little bit. But there wasn't any of that until after Tennessee. Now, after we beat Tennessee the way we did in Knoxville, then the noise started again, okay? The pressure started to build a little bit week to week. But they responded, and it wasn't just a talented team, which it certainly was that, but it was a team with a lot of character that, you know, and there were a few games where we were on the mat. You know, we had to get off the mat and come up swinging, and when it was all said and done, we always won. So it was always difficult for me to picture anyone beating us. I get, you know, I've done about 10 of these podcasts, and everybody asks the same question. Well, could you beat SC? I said, I can't envision anybody beat that team. But, you know, SC was good, and I don't think there's any question about that. But we just had a synergy, a majestic synergy that I think was infectious amongst the entire team. And it just built and built as the season went on.
And Coach, for those who remember, and it's been a while, the year before Auburn was expected to contend for the national championship, opened up the season losing. That was the season of Jetgate. Tuberville was almost fired. He was going to be fired and replaced by Bobby Petrino. I know you were coaching the offense. That was your responsibility. But many have gone back and tried to say that incident helps springboard what happened next. Can you address that?
Yeah, I think it has something to do with it. I don't know that it was the impetus, but it certainly was a factor. I will say that. There was so, you know, when I came in, I was a little naive to the situation. I when you're coaching, you're in a vacuum. And when I was in Indiana, I wasn't aware of anything about Auburn. I knew they had a running back named Cadillac, and I thought that was a pretty cool name, but I didn't even know his last name. So when I came in, I was a little oblivious, but I learned fast. Okay, that when I walked into the building, there was a line in the sand between those who were on one side and those who were on the other. But the players were a little caught in the middle. But when I went out there, and they didn't know me from Adam now. I mean, I call it my cousin Vinny moment. I came in, I was Vinny Bambini. I didn't know nothing. I mean, I didn't dress right. I didn't eat the right foods. I didn't, you know, they were all wondering who the hell I was. But they accepted me because they thought I could coach, and all that stuff kind of went by the wayside as we went there. You know, all the residual effects of the Jetgate situation just slowly went away, and the focus went on the target every week. But I can't honestly say that didn't have something to do with the motivation that went into the 2004 season, if that answers your question.
Well, yeah, it does. In terms of the frustration level, you guys did everything you had to do. You won the SEC, you beat Alabama, of course, you beat Virginia Tech in the Sugar Bowl, but, you know, Tuberville continued to argue, and it never caught on with very many people. And do you think it was because of the greatness of that SC team, or it was just the times when you only had two going and playing for the national championship?
I don't know. That's a good question. I think, you know, whether people want to admit it or not, I think the game the year before did have a little effect.
Right, yeah, those two teams played, yes.
Yeah, and we were a completely different team. That's an unfair analogy, but I think that might have had a little bit to do with it. But SC kind of eliminated themselves with their problems. And that's really, I think, the case that Tubb makes is SC's not even a factor because they supposedly caught their hand in the cookie jar. So who's the best team now? I mean, honestly speaking, I don't, with all due respect to Oklahoma, Oklahoma did not match up well with us. I don't believe Oklahoma could have beat us, but, you know, I don't believe SC could have beat us for that matter. And Utah was the other one, and I don't think they could have beat us either. So why would you vacate a championship when you have a champion? I mean, we won every single game. We did not have any recruiting violations. We had no issues. Did Reggie Bush's playing for USC, is that the difference in 55 to 19? I don't know. Maybe it is, but I doubt it. So we should be the national champions. I mean, I see no rational reason why we shouldn't be. But, you know, my version's a little slanted. And in the book, I'll make that very clear how I feel about it. So, you know, to leave the 2004 championship vacated when there should have been, when there is a champion, I think is absurd. But I don't make that call.
Coach Al Borges, before you go, you saw it. A lot of the turmoil at Auburn, you saw even winning, it was a difficult time because of the bad blood that had occurred. That happened after another incident a couple of years earlier with Terry Bowden. You've been there since then and know what happened to Gus Malzahn. And it happened again recently with Brian Harsin. I don't want to steal your book, but just your thoughts on the often dysfunctionality of Auburn University's football operation.
They care a lot at Auburn, okay? That's pretty simplistically put, but they care a lot. And because they care a lot, it tends to be volatile. It's been like that hell since I can remember, Paul. I mean, you go back, it's there's always when things are going well, it still plays better. When things aren't, a lot of things, you know, there's a lot of said, a lot of things are done, you know, there's all kinds of tumultuous activity. So that's just kind of the nature of a place that has that, you know, cares that much about football. Same thing to a degree happened at Alabama. Now it hasn't as much now with Nick because he's done so well, but think about before that, Paul. I mean, think about that. It's a state that puts a lot of stock in their football teams. And with that comes a ton of ebb and flow year to year. So I don't know. That's probably too simplistic, but I believe that's why.
Coach Al Borges, his book will be out in August, and we are eager to get our hands on it. Coach, thanks for dropping by. We'll see you when the book comes out, if not sooner. Thank you very, very much for your time.
Hey, it was great talking to you again, Paul. I look forward to it.
You bet. You bet. Al Borges, the former coordinator at Auburn, and we are eager to hear more from him in a couple of months. We'll take a break. More of your phone calls at 855-242-7285 right after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free, no insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/Paul. That's Hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. Hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
Daryl is up next. Hello, Daryl.
Paul, first, yesterday, Brian Harsin. I thought what your take on that was absolutely dead on point. Where is the apology at? You know what I mean? I mean, the guy that you're going to rub the man's face in the mud while he's on vacation with his family. Do you think that was probably the worst vacation he has ever taken with his family? I would say so. And here's what I don't understand, Paul. Then he comes back, and then you're going to do an internal investigation, okay? I mean, talk about incompetent. Don't you do the investigation beforehand, before going public? And you know what? this right here speaks volumes about Brian Harsin, okay? He stayed there. He stayed at there, the head coach at Auburn. Most people, to include me, the majority, we would say, screw it. I tell you what, I'll resign. You put the pen out my contract. I will resign, but he stayed there. But, I mean, that man is owed a major, major apology from Auburn. No doubt about that. Miami, okay? Paul, I realize Miami won a national championship when Larry Coker was there, who ended up getting fired. But talk about a dynasty. I mean, do we have to go all the way back to when Jimmy Johnson was there, when they last had their dynasty? And how long ago was that been? I mean, they might be a respectable team now, but the thing they post a dynasty is absolutely comical. I mean, absolutely. And, hey, Lincoln Riley, all right? I don't blame Lincoln Riley. Lincoln Riley says, hey, I had the best team I've ever had, okay? Played in the biggest game up to now that I've ever had as a head coach. And I didn't blow. I watched a 17-point lead get taken off the scoreboard, and I lost to Kirby Smart with Mark Richt's players. If I can't beat Kirby Smart with Mark Richt's players, I damn sure ain't going to be able to beat him with his own players. So I can't blame the guy for leaving. I mean, that's why Oklahoma has not been the same since. And, Paul, I got one more thing. Mike Griffiths. I'm going to listen to what Mike said. I do not understand him, Paul. Oregon, okay? And he said we're going to lose because their new head coach, who's our defense coordinator, is going to – he knows Monken's offense and going to be able to shut down, create a template for everybody else. That just tells you how much Mike Griffiths knows, Paul. I mean, he needs to go listen to Shane Beamer, okay? See what Shane Beamer had to say. It has nothing to do with scheme. Nothing at all, Mike Griffiths. It's all about the players. It's all about the talent. What type of talent do you have on the field? That is what decides football games. And then we're going to lose to Florida. We're going to lose to Tennessee. We might lose to Mississippi State. I mean, really, Mike? Really? And Tennessee going to East? It ain't going to happen, okay? It's not. I know Tennessee's better with Josh Heupel, but Tennessee does not have the talent on the field right now to match what Georgia has, and none of the rest of them do. What's going to happen? We're going to win the East, all right? We're going to play A&M in the SEC title game because A&M's going to beat Alabama. Alabama's going to need us to beat A&M to get in a 14 playoff. We're going to beat A&M, and it's going to end up being Georgia and Alabama again next year for the national championship. But let me ask you this, Paul. Explain this. I want you to explain this for me. I'm being serious. Mike Griffiths knows so much, okay? Why didn't you ever hear him talk about Trayvon Walker?
I brought that up. I don't think I ever heard Trayvon Walker's name out of his mouth.
You didn't hear it out of nobody's mouth but mine, Paul. I told you in February, remember? I said, Paul, mark my word, Trayvon Walker's going to be the first player taken in the draft for Georgia. You heard it from me in February. How can I know that and all these experts not even come close? I was like, good Lord. But I'm going to give you two names, okay? I'm being serious. Two names that you need to get on the show that knows Georgia football really good. One is Neil Hondo Williamson. He does the pregame show for Georgia, does the postgame show for Georgia. He does dog talk. He's been around the program for a long time. He knows his stuff. The other one is Jeff Dantzler. You remember Coach Russell, right? Irk Russell?
Sure.
Coach Russell gave Dantzler, when he was in school at Georgia, a nickname. Called him the walking encyclopedia. And the reason is, I'm telling you, Paul, I've never met anybody that knows as much about that football program as Jeff Dantzler does. And anybody would tell you that's inside that program. Jeff is the man. He knows he's around Kirby. He interviews the players after the game. He talks to Kirby before the game. He has inside sources. He knows his stuff. That's who you need to get on the show. Jeff Dantzler is the man, no doubt about that. But other than that, that's about it. See you, Paul. Bye.
Got that? Got both those names down. Mike is up next in Dallas. So hello, Mike.
Paul, it's a pleasure talking to you. How you doing?
We're doing great. Thank you for calling.
I got a question for you. I'm going to be up front. I'm an Oklahoma homer, but I want you to kind of follow me here, and I want your opinion on something. I don't think that we would have won one or two games if we got stuck in the SEC with the current direction that we were going in. And I am happy as hell of what we got now. But I look back and I look at the receivers that have come out of Oklahoma and gone to the NFL. They were all JUCO transfers that aren't homegrown, let's say. You got three of the quarterbacks that are transfers that aren't homegrown. And then you've got seven players, from what I can take, that got drafted, four or five that got unrestricted invites to other teams, and you can't even win the Big 12. And my question to you is that a reflection on Grinch and Riley, or is that just something that happens with every school? Because I just don't get where this mastermind of a coach label comes from, the guy that just left here. And that's not, I'm not trying to trash the guy. I try to look at the facts, and I just don't see it. Can you give me some insight on that?
Well, I mean, I found some of the end of the season and some of the cherry pick a few games under Lincoln Riley. I thought he blew some big games out there. He never seemed prepared in the semifinal games, other than the one game against against Georgia. I mean, the LSU game was an absolute disaster. The Alabama game was really a disaster. The score was a facade. Alabama was on the verge of going up by about four touchdowns, and they had an offensive penalty on a touchdown, or otherwise that game would have been over by halftime. So you're right, but on the other hand, he was a good recruiter. I mean, Lincoln got his reputation off of a couple of quarterbacks. You know that.
I do. But, Paul, my main question is, how is it that you get all these players drafted and a guy like Perrion Winfrey, who was up and down and goes to the Senior Bowl, and just by all accounts, everybody said this guy could be a steal. You get Benito and everything else. And the worst, I mean, five out of the seven that were drafted, I think, were defensive players. That's your worst part of your team, and it seemed like the team just came completely unwound, and I just don't get – is that a coaching problem?
I mean, Mike, I don't know, because, I mean, I'm not somebody that watches every Oklahoma game from – I mean, I take a 38,000-foot view of them, but, I mean, the rap on him was always the defense, and I think it got better, though. But I think he made a really wise decision for a lot of reasons, but the main reason, to get away from Bob Stoops. He was never going to get out from under the shadow of Bob Stoops, and you saw some of the pettiness of Stoops afterwards and what he said last week. Anyway, up against a break, back with much more, including your phone calls, right after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
And we welcome all of you back. It's great to have you here. And Mickey is in Georgia. Mickey, good afternoon.
Hey, Paul. Good to talk to you again. We spoke last week. Remember, you may recall I told you I was from the hometown of Trayvon Walker.
But, I do remember that, yes.
Today, I'd like to kind of step away from the sports arena, if you don't mind.
Please.
Go back 52 years ago today, Kent State.
Absolutely.
The shootings there on campus.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, Coach Nick Saban playing defensive back for Kent State at the time. And actually, I don't know if he knew one of the girls that was killed or not, but I know he did have a class with one of them. I can't recall her name, but just a moment in time, I would ask the listening audience to just take time to reflect and remember.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. About 10 years ago, maybe a little bit longer, Alabama opened the season against Kent State. And I went down to interview Saban, and we spent a long time talking about that day. And I realized today, if you don't know, I mean, some people know it through movies. Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young had a song, Ohio, that Neil Young wrote. But it was one of the most shocking moments in modern American history that National Guardsmen would open fire on students, and Saban was not that far from where that happened. He told me that day that he was eating lunch at the school student union at the moment that it happened, and then all of a sudden you heard it, and you know, life was never the same again. But it truly is remarkable to think about 52 years ago when that happened.
Another one that, if I'm not mistaken, that was a student at Kent State was Chrissy Hine of the Pretenders.
Yeah, I think you're right about that.
Was also there.
Yeah.
But anyway, just something to denote on today in history.
No, you're right. And if you rock fans have never heard the song, I'm sure most of people of that era have. But if you're young folks who want to hear it, it's you say the Crosby, Stills or the Neil Young version would be the best, or just pretty much the same. I mean, Neil Young does a pretty mean version of Ohio. Catherine is up next. Hello, Catherine.
Hi, Paul. Wow, that is a long time ago.
It is.
Seems like maybe just yesterday, but and of course we've had so many other different tragedies happen since then. But anyway, I just wanted to ask about what's going on with Kyle Trask.
It's a good question. I'm trying to remember. he was with the Bucks last year.
Yeah, and I thought, as far as I know, he was still there. I mean,
yeah, I'm assuming he is.
I guess
there was some expectation that maybe he would, improve his stock with Brady retiring. But Brady's back. Is Brady still coming back? Has he changed his mind again? I was just not sure.
I don't know. I guess he is. But you know, I mean, us, you know, being Gator fans, we really had a lot of hope, and you know, was excited to see him, you know, play, and he was in the exhibition games. But then we haven't heard anything else.
Well, so. when you back up Tom Brady, you're probably not going to see a lot of upward mobility.
Well, I wish they'd at least let us know that he's still around and, you know, not in witness protection somewhere or whatever.
I'll check down with Kyle and see if he could maybe send us an SOS.
Listen, I just
another good song, by the way.
I wanted to tease you just a little bit. Yesterday, the guy was talking about your footwear. Well, I think we got to do the overall wardrobe, and I think we need to get you some Steve Harvey suit and tie.
Really?
Yeah. Maybe conservative, but then we'll have you all fixed up.
Hold on. I think that's oxymoronic to say that Steve Harvey would be conservative.
I don't know. What kind of a color shirt would you like? He's got a wide variety.
Yeah, Catherine, I will tell you, I've gone rather old-fashioned in my dress. I used to be a little snazzier back in the early years, but I've grown away from that. But Harvey probably spends more a week on his clothes than I do in my have in my lifetime.
He does. He's a lot of fun to watch, though. He's quite an entertainer.
No, he is. He's brilliant.
And so are you. Well, listen, thanks, Paul. Have a nice evening.
That might be. Thank Bye. You. That might be the only time in my life I've ever been compared to Steve Harvey.
You go to the same barber.
I mean, what does he do that I...
You go to the same barber.
He's a funny guy. I mean, I will say one thing about Steve Harvey. He used to be a remember, didn't he do... I think, didn't he get his start, like, hosting radio shows in two different cities?
Yeah.
He would fly, I think, from Detroit to Dallas every day. Yeah. He would host a morning show, and then was that Steve Harvey or somebody else? I'm trying to remember. That was Steve Harvey, wasn't it? And no, he's one of the hardest working guys. I mean, I'm just a bum here hosting this show every day, dressing like Cat Daddy's uncle in a coffin. We are going to a break. More of your phone calls and advice for me right after this.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network, beginning at 3 Eastern.